Leaders.
Banking and crime. Hitting at terrorists. Hurting businesses. Forcing banks to police the financial system is causing nasty side effects.
Kidnappings for ransom, drug smuggling, fake invoicing and extortion are just a few of the ways in which terrorists raise cash for their nefarious deeds. Some scams take advantage of globalization. American officials found that Hezbollah, a Lebanese movement, raised funds by exporting used cars from America and selling them in West Africa. Governments are understandably keen to cut terrorists off from sources of cash and have been taking drastic steps to punish banks for involvement in financing dangerous people. In 2012, the American authorities imposed a $1.9 billion fine on HSBC, a British bank, for lax controls on money laundering. Big fines have been meted out to Barclays, ING and Standard Chartered for money laundering or sanctions busting. BNP Paribas of France is said to be facing a fine of as much as $10 billion in America. Such stiff penalties are popular and provide great press for ambitious prosecutors. Cut the flow of money to terrorism, their thinking goes, and it will wither. Yet there are two problems with this approach. First, the regulations are so demanding and the fines so large that banks are walking away from countries and businesses where they perceive even the faintest whiff of risk. American regulators, for instance, require banks to know not only who their customers are and what they plan to do with their cash, but also the identities and intentions of their customers' customers. Correspondent banking relationships, the arteries of global finance that allow people and firms to send money from one country to another, even if their own bank does not have a branch there, are therefore collapsing. Some of the world's biggest banks privately say they are cutting as many as a third of these relationships. This retreat will have little impact on the rich world. Britain's Lloyds Banking Group say we'll probably always transact with Wells Fargo in America or ICBC in China. But it could prove devastating to small, poor countries whose banks lose their big international partners just because the costs of checking up on them outweigh the paltry profits they generate. Some countries risk being cut off from the financial system altogether. British banks last year threatened to close the last pipeline for money transfers into Somalia. Others will see the costs of intermediation rise. Bankers talk of a tenfold increase in fees paid to send money to countries such as Tanzania. Cotton farmers in Mali and small exporters in Indonesia will find it increasingly hard to get trade finance. Even well-known charities responding to UN calls for assistance in countries such as Syria are struggling to get banks to let them send aid. Were all of this actually preventing terrorism, it might be judged a fair trade-off. Yet, and this is the second problem with this approach, it seems likely to be ineffective or even counterproductive. Terrorism is not particularly expensive, and the money needed to finance it can travel by informal routes. In 2012, guards on the border between Nigeria and Niger arrested a man linked to Boko Haram, a Nigerian terror group, with €35,000, or $47,000, in his underpants. Laughable, except that the group has killed around 1,500 people this year alone. Restrictions on banks will encourage terrorists to avoid the banking system. That may hinder rather than help the fight against terrorism. A former spy complains that it has become harder to piece together intelligence on terrorist networks now that the money flows within them are entirely illicit. When the G20 meets later this year, it should urge its members to accept the risk that even in well-regulated banking systems, money may find its way to terrorists. Banks should be given clear guidance on necessary safeguards, but not held responsible for every breach.